Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
This episode is brought to you by the Premier Short-Term Rental Facebook group, Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members, and this is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth. That's Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth on Facebook.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. I have a super cool, very smart guest today, Bethany LaFlamme. She is the managing partner of Premier Law Group with Mauricio Raould. She's also a syndicator of boutique hotels and resort properties, which is super cool, by the way. So we're going to talk about some law stuff, some short-term rental stuff. And I love having attorneys on here because I don't have to say, well, I'm not an attorney, so you have to ask one. So we have one to ask. So how's it going, Bethany?
It's great. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Oh, also, I forgot to mention how Bethany and I met. She's got a cool webinar called Bubbles with Bethany, right about happy hour time. What days are those? It's a cool little hangout.
Thursday at 4 Pacific.
Yeah. Thursday at 4 Pacific. Cool. All right. So Bethany, will you just kind of introduce yourself to our audience and give us an overview of what you do and all these different things that you do?
Sure, I'm happy to. So I am a securities lawyer. So I've been practicing law for 24 years now. And what I always tell people, because people are like, what the hell is a securities lawyer? What even does that mean? I help people practice safe sec. And that means that if you're raising money from other people who are passive, I help you stay compliant. Or if you're not ready to practice safe sec, I will help you abstain effectively, because you really shouldn't engage in sec unless you are ready and with someone you like and trust.
Okay. And her bio somewhere, guys, does say lawyers can be funny. So, all right. So
I'll leave that up to you whether or not that's me.
I thought it was funny. So, all right, let's talk about, now you made me laugh and I've lost my train of thought. Syndications. So I've seen a lot of clients, you know, they mention wanting to syndicate short-term rentals or maybe not even going that far. Maybe they're like, I want to have a bunch of partners and buy some stuff. But you mentioned, I didn't even know this was a thing, which I'm sure a lot of other people don't know it's a thing too. You can accidentally syndicate something if you don't do a joint venture or JV partnership, right? And you don't want to do that. So can you explain to us what that is, why you don't want to do it, and how to avoid doing that?
Yes. I see a lot of times when I'm talking to groups where I'll explain what a syndication is. So I'll do that first. And then a lot of people will just tense up like, oh shit, I might have done that, right? And that's usually when this comes up. So a syndication really is anytime you are accepting capital from an investor who is passive in a deal, and they are relying on your efforts to generate a return for that money. So they're passive, you're working, they expect a return. That's a security. So that's a pretty broad definition of security. I have a lot of people who are like, yeah, but my rich uncle, he doesn't really want to do this. He's got money and it's just the one guy. That's still technically a security, which means you either need to register that security, which is almost never going to be relevant in real estate because it takes a long time. It's really expensive. Or you need to find an exemption from having to register. And that's usually where I live, right? Usually that's, people might've heard of Reg D 506B or 506C. We don't need to get into all that, but that is an exemption from having to register if it's a security. So what I just said is a security. They're passive, you're active, they want a return from their money, and you've got some sort of agreement, right? So people look at me and they're like, okay, what do I do then, right? Now, one thing you can do is you can have a joint venture. But it's not as simple as just saying, I don't want to deal with the SEC, so I'm just going to call it a joint venture. Unfortunately, you don't get to decide whether or not it's a JV or a security. It either is or it isn't. And those two things are mutually exclusive, right? So if you want it to be a joint venture because you don't want to deal with it being securities because maybe you don't have enough investors or you're not raising enough money for that to be worth the cost of compliance, all those things, then one thing you could do is you could give everybody who's putting money in a role. So they have to be somewhat active. Now, I recognize that a lot of times, like, the rich uncle isn't going to want to be out, like, talking to property managers and dealing with toilets and all the things that they're relying on you to do. But you can give that person voting rights that are meaningful, right? Oversight that is meaningful. So think, like, if you've ever been to a preferred equity group where they get to call the shots, they give you a bunch of money, but they're like, okay, but we want to kind of watch and make sure you're doing okay. That's not necessarily security because they're calling shots. So a couple things to think about when you're doing that is you can't have it look like a syndication, meaning you're not taking a fee, you're not giving a preferred return, you're not structuring it to look like a syndication, and you're not just giving them voting rights that don't really matter. Okay, here's 1% voting right. Okay, we win. The SEC is smarter than that, right? So a couple things to look for when you want to make sure that it's a JV and not a syndication is you don't want to have too many investors. Good rule of thumb that Mauricio and I kind of made it up just based on our own comfort level, which is if you have more than 8 people putting in the money in a JV, it's going to start to look more like a syndication. Because you probably don't need a team that big to do a deal, especially in the short-term rental single family space.
Yeah.
So it's going to look like a JV. If you're splitting things 80-20 or, you know, like I said, structured it like a syndication, it's going to look like a syndication. It probably is a syndication. And one other thing is if you're paying fees to the person who's doing all the work, or if you're paying those investors first and they're not really active. So there's some things you can do to make it a JV if you decide you don't want to do the compliance. If you don't want to do, so there's like sort of a hybrid, right? If you're like, oh, I don't want to give them a bunch of voting rights, but I don't want to do a full-blown PPM. So it's a private placement memorandum. It's like 75 pages of super scary risk disclosures, right? Like, oh, I don't want to do that. My uncle's never going to read that or sign that. Fine. If your uncle is accredited, you can do sort of a pared down offering, still a security. You still have to find an exemption, but you don't have to provide a whole PPM. Just some high-level risk disclosures, have them sign an agreement, and we're all good. So we can help with that. So there's sort of levels depending on where people are.
So the biggest thing that kind of rung bells for me here is one of the most common ways that people partner on short-term rentals is somebody's the money person, somebody's the sweat equity person. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sounds like it might fall in that area that you're talking about, the red area, not even a gray area, red area of maybe being a syndication in the eyes of the SEC.
It could be. And I know this happens all the time. So I'm not saying everybody who's doing it's going to jail. That's not what I'm saying. I'm
yes,
saying
y'all are.
Criminals. Everyone's going to jail. all of a sudden, like, just economy just stops because, you know, Main Street's like, oh, I can't do this. No, if you set it up with the voting rights and the oversight, it still can be a partnership. I recognize that a lot of times people with the money don't want to do the work and the people who are doing the work don't have the money. That happens all the time.
Right.
And as long as you're giving, you know, meaningful voting rights and oversight to everybody where it's a true partnership, it's true that in some real partnerships, one person has the money, one person does the work. That's fine. They just can't be what's called passive in the eyes of the SEC. But again, if they're like voting on whether or not you get to refi, they're voting on whether or not you get to sell. They're voting on what's the requirement for the tenants. They're voting on what's the theme of the short-term rental. They're voting on these things. They're overseeing you. They're voting on whether or not you have to do the property management or you're going to hire a property manager. That's all very meaningful. That makes them a partner.
Okay. And guys, I'd like to take this opportunity to point out why you should not do things like use LegalZoom to set up LLCs and operating agreements. And that also not all attorneys are created equal, because I'd be willing to bet a lot of you had attorneys draw up operating agreements for your joint ventures, and none of this stuff was ever mentioned or brought up about not accidentally syndicating. I'd be willing to bet there's a lot of you listening. So don't do that.
I've seen that a lot. Yeah. LegalZoom, I mean, if you're going to, even setting up an LLC, I wouldn't even suggest, unless you exactly know why you're setting it up, who should be managing it, and all of that. Things that seem simple, I wouldn't use LegalZoom. And I'll tell you, if you read the fine print on any LegalZoom or that kind of document, it'll say, they'll give you like a template document, and they'll say, have a lawyer review this if it's LegalZoom. But you're right. Other attorneys, I've seen it where they're like, well, my attorney did this and it's just a JV and it's fine. But if they don't practice securities law, they might not be looking for those things, which that's all I do is practice securities law. So I'm always looking for those things.
Yeah. And I think that that's a misconception about attorneys, is that people don't realize that not all attorneys are I don't think any attorney should be trying to do all the things, but it's like doctors, like there's different types for different things and you have to go to the right one for the right problem.
That's right. Yeah. And we should all stay in our lanes for sure. Yeah. You wouldn't catch me doing criminal law because see, you probably would go to jail.
I feel like I missed my calling as an attorney and it's too late to go back now, but I wanted like, if somebody says something on the internet or something, I get like, know exactly, like, let's say somebody says, oh, you know, I have a property and it's not really doing well. And what can I do? But they don't post their name or like, or they do post their name. They don't post the address. I will go find it. I will know everything about this person and the property that they are having a problem with before they even send it to me. I'm like, I already found it. It's fine. Maybe I need to be an investigator.
I was going to say you'd be a good investigator, but you didn't miss your calling because that means you are a kick-ass due diligence person.
Sometimes.
Right? Yeah. Well, you can if you want to.
When right? I so choose.
You know, diligence. I'm in the middle of diligence right now. And it's not fun.
There was this one time my husband and I bought a single family. It's towards the beginning of our career. And I wasn't involved. I'm going to say he just completely forgot to get an inspection, just forgot. Didn't do it. And the only reason he realized that he didn't do it was when the appraiser came out, they were like, I think we'll want to see this foundation crack fixed, but it ended up not being a foundation crack. It was just like where the little porch wasn't poured right and was separating. But he was like, oh my God, I didn't get an inspection.
I'll tell you, this is where a really good real estate agent is gold. Our real estate agent on the property that we're in diligence on right now just has been ordering all of it. Like, tell me which ones you don't want and ordering all the inspections for us and meeting me at the property. I'm like,
oh, that's nice.
Thank you so much. It's so nice.
Yeah. Cause there can be, depending on where you are, there can be a lot of different types of inspections. And for somebody like you that is experienced, that's probably okay that they're ordering all that stuff. But I like, especially when we have new clients, I'm happy to tell you, you know, give you a list of people to call, but there's so much that can be like lost in translation. Or I think I saw one time, I was talking to another agent and they had ordered the inspection for the client. The client just said, I don't care. Just, you know, hire whoever you normally hire and send me the bill. And then they missed something. And then the client came after the agent because the inspector missed something. So
yeah.
Anyway,
I don't usually get that kind of grace being a lawyer. Most courts wouldn't be like, oh, you missed something in all the documents that you read. Don't feel bad for lawyers when we miss something.
Yeah. Back to the due diligence. Okay. Well, you said property that you have under contract. I want to hear all about the boutique hotels, because this is definitely something that a lot of short-term rental investors eventually want to graduate into, myself included. I've never bought one, but I own single family long-term. Multifamily long-term and I have single family short-term. And I feel like marrying the two, I would never buy an apartment building and try and convert that to a motel. Like I want to buy a cool Route 66 motel and make it cool. I've done zero diligence on that. So y'all don't go do that just because I said, but it seems cool. So I want to hear about it from you.
So if you would have asked me a few years ago, do I want to syndicate my own deals? I would have been like, oh, I'm good on the other side of it. I'm passive in some deals. And then I see hundreds and hundreds of deals as the lawyer doing the compliance, right? So I do get a nice look at them. And that kind of gave me the itch to look a little bit deeper. But the reality is I only ever have considered resort properties because my retirement plan is I like to host retreats and I want to be able to go to beautiful places around the world and host retreats at properties I own and make money in my retirement doing that. That was the dream. And my mindset coach, I think we talked about her before, she was like, why are you waiting? Look now. So I put the feelers out. So the first property is a boutique hotel in Placencia, Belize. And it was an off-market deal that one of my clients and friends, once I mentioned to him that I might want to do this in the future, he's like, well, here's one. And it was just kind of like dropped in my lap and it was really cool because it was off market and the seller didn't really want to sell, but he kind of had to, cause he was moving back to the States. I got like 7 months diligence with nobody trying to bid against me or rush me or whatever, which is first lawyer. It was like, it was a dream. Right. So I got to get really comfortable with the deal and then go in and bring partners into the deal. So I brought in the agent who found me that deal, who's an agent in Belize, boots on the ground. And then I brought in investor girl Britt to help on the marketing of the hotel. And then a couple other people to help on the team. And I fell in love. right? I'm like, okay, eventually we're going to create a fund where we can do this. Well, while we're still doing that, we're building tree houses right now and it's super awesome. It's a perfect place for retreats. While that's all going on, another property, and I don't know if anybody out there who's like, oh my God, I can't find properties. They just call me because they just keep coming. my partner, Mauricio, said, hey, listen, there's this ranch that I've been watching for a few years in Southern California, and I'd like to build a home there, but it'd be perfect for retreats, you know, all these things. And I was like, look, I'm kind of busy right now. I don't know, you know, but I went to this property in Southern California. It's 1,225 acres in Southern California, which is like who knew that that was even available in Southern California? Well, it wasn't because he sold it. Right. And it has this beautiful, Italian villa on it. It looks like you're in Tuscany, this place. Right. And I was like, I actually had this vision of retiring on a bed, having a bed and breakfast in Tuscany on a vineyard, whatever. And I walked in and I was like, wait, this is it. It's just in Southern California. I didn't know. Right. So I was like, all right, we have to figure this out. It's a big lift. So we're in diligence now. We have not a lot of time to raise a whole lot of money. So this is going to be like, you know, the biggest career move ever, not career move, I guess. I'm not leaving the practice of law, but the biggest lift I've ever done in my career, I guess. And, you know, it's 35 million.
Whoa, that is a big lift.
Yeah. So it's a $35 million property, but I got the underwriting back from the developer and the team. And this thing is just, if we do this right, it's going to be a cash cow. And we're able to do a few subdivides to just have a private community of some really large ranches. So we have this awesome equestrian community, whatever. And then I can host events and retreats on one of the parcels. And the thing that really is exciting about it is, first of all, it's perfect for retreats and short term. There's glamping and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
There's a giraffe.
A what? A giraffe.
A giraffe. And zebras. The guy who's selling it, it's the Dick Marconi property. He was one of the co-founders of Herbalife, and he was a Formula One racer, pretty famous guy, at least here in Southern California. He's got the Marconi Automotive Museum here in Southern California, a philanthropist. Well, he supports a charity for immunocompromised children. And way back in the day, he set up a sanctuary with wild animals so that kids who can't go to the wild animal park in San Diego because of health reasons could come and see the animals. And so we decided we wanted to keep his legacy going and keep them.
This episode of The Short Term Show is brought to you by The Short Term Shop. 30-year fixed mortgages, tax benefits, and long-distance management training made easy are just a few of the perks of owning a short-term rental. The Short Term Shop can help you buy and learn how to manage your property from anywhere in the world. Just go to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected. Again, that's theshorttermshop.com, and we are brokered by eXp. See y'all over there.
If you want to buy a short-term rental in one of the best vacation markets in America, you're looking for The Short Term Shop. They are the experts in the vacation rental space. Their team of realtors are fantastic. And if you use the Short Term Shop to buy your home, you'll have access to free classes with me to teach you how to get your property up and running. Join us at theshorttermshop.com, brokered by eXp.
So how do you write a giraffe and zebras into a contract, commercial real estate contract?
Well, okay, this deal is so weird. The agents and the seller insisted that we do this because there's a single family residence on it. We did it on the California form single family residence contract with another 1,000 acres all around it of like raw land, undeveloped land.
Wow.
All in, so now the addendums, you can imagine, so I'm not a transactions lawyer, so I do have a lawyer doing that part for me. And she's like writing all these addendums in there. So it's like addendums attached to a form contract. It's the weirdest deal ever.
So they're just on a real estate contract.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Just add up. Like, it's basically like farm equipment and inventory. It's like inventory. Yeah. And then we're doing it almost like a business workout because the whole ranch is an operating business. Right. Okay. And so we're having to acquire like whatever contracts they have, whatever license they have to have those animals. Cause you can't just have a giraffe. Right? You have to
What's the giraffe's name?
Jomo.
Jomo. Okay.
JOMO. And it's going to be a whole big thing because we got to find JOMO a girlfriend. He looks really lonely. It's just him.
Where do you get that?
Well, my Google search history is really funny right now. It's like, where can you buy a giraffe in California? Are zebras mean?
Like, I heard what they are.
They are. So they have to keep JOMO separated from the zebras. And then there's some other animal. They look like gazelles. And I forget what they're called. It starts with a K. Anyway, they can't have those because they have the horns, and they can impale and have impaled giraffes, so they're separated. So poor JOMO is there. Well, he's with llamas or alpacas.
Those guys are kind of cute.
I don't know. There's a difference between llamas and alpacas, and I think they're alpacas, not llamas.
I think llamas are bigger. I think I've met one in my life.
Yeah, they're small. They're very cute. So we have a few of those as well. So we are acquiring pretty much like an animal sanctuary with this whole property. So we can provide really unique experiences for our retreats.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, things you never thought you would be dealing with in a real estate contract.
No, I know. Like, the diligence has been really fun. Yeah. Who knew?
I think that's probably the biggest short-term rental deal I've ever heard of.
Yeah. And I'm told I wanted to, because I want to live in the house, I'll be honest with you. Run it like an Airbnb. And I'm not sure I'm allowed to do that. I have to make sure, because we might be able to, not an Airbnb, sorry, a bed and breakfast. And our employer says you might have to run it like an Airbnb. You might not be able to stay there. It's a different license. So I'm learning all kinds of things too, as I go through this, about short-term rentals and what you can and can't do. And so all of you out there that are doing Airbnb and Vrbo on that, according to my lawyer, that is a better business model than doing a bed and breakfast, which is what I wanted to do. Yeah.
So did you jump straight from not having any short-term rentals to a motel or hotel in another country and then a $35 million ranch?
I did. Yeah, I did. It's all about partners. On the hotel side, my partner, David Kafka, not only is he a real estate agent there, he has other resort properties in Belize. So I felt confident going into Belize and doing all that. Now, I do have business experience. And actually, before I practiced securities law, I was doing mergers and acquisitions. So I know how to acquire ongoing businesses. So if you look at boutique hotels, that's really buying a business more than real estate.
Yes, that is. Okay. And that makes sense now that you have that experience too. So what would be your advice for somebody who wants to get into this, into the hotel thing, whether it's syndicating or buying on their own, that maybe doesn't have all this extensive experience that you have with doing this?
Pair up with somebody who does. For example, if your listeners are, hey, I find these deals all the time. Oh my gosh, I want to be able to capitalize on them. That was me, right? I'm like, these deals are just like falling in my lap. Well, I gotta do this. Find good partners. I always say OPE, other people's everything, not just money, but expertise. And all of that. So good partners, make sure you do your diligence, of course, on the partners. It's a marriage, right?
Right.
And then education. You know, when I first did this, it's really funny. So Rich Summers is now a client, and I don't know if your listeners know who Rich Summers. Oh, you were just on him.
I just saw him last week. Yeah.
I know, and I was going to drive down and see you and Amanda, and I couldn't do it.
Oh, so, yeah. She was like, yeah, Bethany was going to come with me, and then she had something to do, but.
Yeah, I wasn't able to do it. So Rich Summers, he's a client now, but before he was even a client, when I decided to do this, I just like watched his whole YouTube channel and dove in like, okay, what does he have to say about this? Because he's an expert in boutique hotels. So that was a free education that then, by the way, landed me a client too, which is great.
Because
he asked me to speak to his boutique hotel mastermind. I was like, are you sure? Because I've been watching your YouTube channel to learn how to do this. Well, he was like, yeah, I'm gonna learn about money.
So that leads me to another question about education. So like, you and I know that Rich is totally legit and knows what he's doing, but how do you, if you're somebody who doesn't know that because you know the person, how do you choose when you're doing something new like this, how do you choose who to follow and whose advice to take?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a lot of noise out there, and it's the same answer that I always have, which is other people. Go to other people that you know, like, and trust, and ask around. You know, like, hey, I see this guy out there. What's this guy's deals? What's he all about? I mean, Rich is pretty easy to get people. Like, we had a lot of people in common that we knew. And so I was able to see like, hey, what's up with this guy? Is he any good? You're right. It helps that he's a client and I see his deals. And so I know he's trying, not trying. I know he is being compliant. I know he's doing all the right things by his investors and all of that. But before that, I would just ask around. He was referred to me by someone else that I know, like, and trust. And I think you just have to keep, just like you do due diligence on your properties, you should do diligence on the sources of information, because you don't want to listen to the noise that's not good for you. Right.
Right.
And so, yeah, ask people that you already do know, like, and trust.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of noise out there. That's what I'm going to call it. Of people who just see a topic that is interesting to a lot of people, and then they kind of jump in to try and be an influencer there when they don't really know what they're doing yet. Maybe they've done like a deal, but they aren't there yet, and they want to charge a bunch of money. Put the cart before the horse, so to speak. So I'm going to switch gears here. I just kicked my desk. Sorry if it looks like I had an earthquake. So if you are one of those other people with money that the operators are looking for to use other people's money, if somebody comes to you and you're a money person, how do you, like, what do you look for in the offering of a syndication to know whether it's going to be something you want to be involved in or not? Because again, there can be a lot of noise. There's a lot of people out there that are, you know, they'll get a bunch of followers and like, I'm doing a syndication, et cetera, but they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah. The first thing always is the team. Dig into the team, make sure that everybody on the team you're comfortable with. Right. And so you're going to want to look and make sure that they've got somebody on the team that has the experience that's required for the deal, the asset, or running it, that kind of thing. So make sure you're comfortable with the team. You trust them. The know, like, and trust, right? You've all heard people talking about know, like, and trust. The team is the most important thing. I have seen amazing properties go to shit. Sorry, am I allowed to say that on here?
Yeah.
Because the team just ran it into the ground, because they didn't know what they were doing. They grew too big. They were too busy focusing on acquisitions and not enough on operations. All the things that happen, right? In that space. So the team is the very first thing. After that, dig into what their offering documents say, right? So you're talking about being passive. There should be a private placement memorandum. That's the big disclosure document that's required when you're going to take passive investors. So when it's a syndication, like we talked about at the very beginning, you're going to see all of, like, a stack of documents. And while I think everybody should read them all, I know that not everybody does or will. Make sure that you use your advisors to guide you. If you have an attorney, if you have a financial advisor, CPA, somebody, have somebody that you trust help to review the documents if you don't understand. Or I will say, at least for our clients, when our clients engage us, we include a few hours of time as part of the flat fee to explain the documents to investors if they need it. And a lot of people don't use that. And I don't know why, because you could lose a lot of investors who just, nobody wants to feel dumb. So if they don't understand, then, you know, they might run away. But if you say, hey, listen, I understand this is really complicated. Our lawyers will explain everything to your lawyers or to you, whatever you want. Now, I'm not going to pitch the deal for you, but I will explain all the legalese and what does this mean and what's the waterfall and all that. So that's one thing. And then in the offering documents, the places to look, if you're going to skip over some stuff, because there is some boilerplate stuff that just has to be in all these, right? Like, what's the definition of accredited investor and all those things, that's just got to be in there. Look at the definitions, because we actually define complicated concepts that we have to repeat more than once, one time in the definition, so we don't have to keep doing it a bunch of times, right? So the fees, for example, you definitely want to know what fees the sponsors are taking, and you want to understand when they get paid out and how they get paid out and what they're based on. Right. So it's an asset management fee. That's great. Is that paid monthly? Is that paid quarterly? Is that based on gross rents? Is that based on something else? Right. So make sure you understand what the fees are, and then make sure you understand the waterfall. How are the allocations of loss and the allocations of cash going to flow? Are you getting paid first? You probably should be as a passive investor. You know, after fees, of course, after reasonable fees, what does that look like? Do you understand it? Is it the same in the PPM as what they pitched you, right? Because in the operating agreement, make sure the operating agreement is how they have to run this thing at the end. That's a contract that makes all of us members in the same company. That's the operating agreement. So what's in there is going to control. So that's what you sign. You don't sign a pitch deck. You sign an operating agreement. So is that the same as what they said to you and that you understood? So that's really important. You don't want someone to be out there selling securities telling you, hey, don't worry, we're going to 10x your money. It's all good. Our lawyers just made us do all this, but it's okay. Whatever you sign is what it's going to be, right? So you want to make sure that's what you thought it was going to be. And then look for the really high level risk disclosures. Is this house in a flood zone? And, you know, am I comfortable with that? Is there insurance for that? Is this house the subject of some weird litigation that, you know, I need to know about? Major risks of that particular asset. You want to take a look at and make sure that you understand the potential risks of what you're getting into. And then make sure you're comfortable with it. You know, if it doesn't meet your, this is, I think, the biggest thing, and this isn't really legal. This is just sort of like practical advice, is before you look at any of these deals, you should know what your goals are of passive investing. What is it that you need? Do you need a little security? Do you want high returns because you got all the time in the world to wait? Do you, or, you know, for higher risk? Like, what is your investment appetite? You know, what kind of risk can you tolerate? What do you need in terms of cash flow? What do you need in terms of tax benefits? And then make sure this deal has what you have, what you need for it to have. And a good sponsor will be looking for that and asking you. A good sponsor is going to say, is this a good fit? Because if it's not, you don't want, even a sponsor doesn't want investors that's not a good fit, because that's going to be a pain in their ass going forward.
Yeah. So what would you say are red flags to look for? Or, I mean, it's probably a little bit subjective, but is there anything that if you're reading this PPM document that would make you go, wait a minute, I don't know about this?
Huge sponsor teams is a red flag in my opinion, okay, because what that tells me is, and it might not be a deal breaker, but it's something to look further into. So let me be clear, because a lot of times people getting started out, they need more help. And so they have a little bit of a bigger team. So I'm not trying to eliminate people that are trying to get their start, but just look a little further into it, because usually as the securities lawyer, when I see huge sponsor teams, that tells me that they're paying people just to raise capital, which is illegal, right? You can't pay people.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. And that's why I'm always like shouting. So in order to get compensated to raise capital, you need to be a registered broker dealer with FINRA. And that's a big heavy duty license. The exemption that people fall under is that you're allowed to go raise money for your own deal, right? So you can raise money for your own deal and you can make a profit because you're raising money to operate your syndication business. You're raising money to operate your short-term rental business. So you're allowed to make a fee. You're not supposed to, though, take a percentage of what you raise as it's called transactions-based compensation, and you've got to have a license to get that. So when you see people like 10 sponsors deep, that tells me that there's probably somebody on there that's just investor relations, right? Which is almost never what they're really doing. So to be on a GP team, you need to have substantial duties to get a cut of that GP while you're raising money.
Good to know.
So the biggest, to me, the biggest red flag is too big of a GP. Another one is sort of the bait and switch, are the offering documents the same as what you were told? You know, because a lot of times, especially as some syndicators grow, they get people helping them, dialing for dollars is what I call it, where they've got people out calling around for investors, which in theory is fine, but you don't want people who are incentivized to tell investors whatever they need to tell them to get them to invest, right? Because this is not a negotiation. You're offering what you're offering, and they should understand exactly what they're getting. This is not like selling gym memberships, right? This is selling security. So it's kind of a big deal. So offering stuff that's too good to be true without some explanation as to why. Like, it's possible, like, we're offering a stupid high return on our ranch deal, but we're doing it because we don't have enough time to get traditional debt, and we're treating it like pref equity. That's why, right? Because otherwise people are like, ooh, that's high, what's wrong, right? So too high, too good of a deal, you need to look deeper into why.
Okay, that makes sense. Thing.
Yeah.
All right, what else have I not asked that you feel like one of those other things that you want to shout from the rooftops that listeners of this show who might be a little new, maybe looking for partners, maybe they're trying to park some money in a syndication, like what are some other just pieces of advice you would want to make sure that they know before turning off their, almost said turning off their radio, maybe their radio, turning off their podcast app?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I would say take a breath for a second, take a beat and don't rush into it. Get yourself familiar and comfortable with what it is your goals are, whatever it is, whether you're going to go out and do a raise or you're going to go out and buy a bunch of properties or you're going to invest in someone else's properties. Figure out what your goals are first. Because a lot of times people are like, I just got to go. I got to go. Especially entrepreneurs, right? Like, I just got to do stuff. And you just like, you throw money into something, or you throw your time and your energy and your effort into something, make sure that you are intentional about what you're doing, but then act. Because so there's a balance, right? There's like, don't just jump in without doing a little bit of diligence, but don't get stuck in analysis paralysis where you just like analyze 500 deals for 5 years and you never do anything. At some point, you just got to jump. It's kind of like having kids. You're never ready. You just got to do it, right? Like no one's ever ready for this. And I can tell you, whatever side of this you're on, it's a little scary and you're probably never 100% going to be ready. And you're never going to 100% be completely sure, because this is an investment. It's not a sure thing, but at least you can go in with an educated, it's an educated guess, all of this, right? It's an educated guess. So you should at least know though, what you want to get out of it. And then especially for the women listening, and I don't know what percentage of your audience is women, but especially for the women listening, is we sometimes quiet our gut instinct, and don't do that. Because that is one of our tools that we have. I guess men probably have it too, right? But don't just, if you're comfortable or you're not comfortable, listen to that, right? I think men are just better at trusting it and saying, I'm good, I'm confident, I can do this, because of just, you know, how financial literacy gets trained and taught and everything else, right? But I think as women, do your research and then trust that you've done your research. Trust, if you ask people you know, like, and trust, you've done all the things, then you just got to go. You got to do it. I think that's probably not legal. It's definitely not legal advice, but in some respects it is, because you want to do some diligence before you do anything in this world, right? Like you want to get information and then go.
We are 54% women listenership and clients at the Short Term Shop. So significantly higher than the real estate investing industry as a whole. So super psyched about that.
That makes me so happy. Good job. Good. Well, then, hey, ladies, listening, you are in this just as much as the guys. And now that said, and I don't want to make it seem like, oh, you know, I'm not bashing men at all. I'm definitely not. Learn, because I'll tell you what, men know how to make money, man. They know how to make money, you know, use them as a resource. And nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Well, Bethany, it's been a really fun show. We have three questions at the end of our show that we ask everyone. The first question is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Bethany?
I would tell 20-year-old Bethany to exactly what I said before, which is figure out exactly what you want and then only do things that get you closer to that, and get into real estate earlier. I was in college then, and I would say maybe a little less time partying and a little more time planning for the future. And then I would just let her know that it works out. So don't be afraid of doing that, because it all works out.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I often look back and think, man, if I would have just like put my head down and worked harder in college, like I'm talking about at my jobs and not school itself. And right after, like how much quicker I could have started in things. I mean, I guess everybody has that feeling. I don't regret that, you know, I definitely, wild oats were sown, but there are times that I'm like, you could have done both at the same time. But anyway,
I would have started a business way sooner.
Once I realized that it's not that property. Hard. Yes.
I would have bought property. I would have house hacked. I would have all the things I'm telling my kid to do, right? Like instead of renting, you know, a shitty little place in college, I would have house hacked. Figured it out, right?
I think that's probably my biggest real estate regret too, is that I had this dumb idea that like you don't buy a house until you're like ready for the forever house. So if it wasn't going to be something comparable to like what my parents have, why would I buy some like small little house? And that was so stupid.
Yeah, I had no idea. I mean, I didn't have a family of entrepreneurs either. So it was sort of like, just go to college so you can get out of this crap, right? Just focus on getting out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I think everyone has that same one. Second, what advice would you give a new investor who's looking to get started today in 2024, really weird time in real estate?
Link up with someone who's got a huge track record, who's seen the cycles, and ask them to mentor you. Awesome. And it doesn't have to be a big, huge, expensive course. Ask someone to mentor you. You might have to do some work for it, right? But I would say find someone who's seen some cycles and has recovered from it and has a track record, and ask them to mentor you.
Also great advice. And last, What is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Okay. So, because I'm always reading something. I think probably the biggest impact for me was Who Not How. And that, gosh, if I can remember who wrote it now, I should remember this. But you could, it's everywhere. Who Not How. And to me, that was the most important, because as entrepreneurs, we have a tendency to jump in and try to do everything ourselves and think we have to have all the answers figured out before we move to the next thing. And it kind of goes along with what I'm always talking about, with this, which is OPE, other people's everything. leverage your people. And sometimes it's just finding another person to do. You don't have to figure out how to get something done. You just figure out somebody who already knows how to get it done for you. So Who Not How, I think, was Dan Sullivan, I think.
Dan Sullivan. Right? Yes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. That one.
All right. That's a great one. And last thing, if our listeners want to follow you, come to Bubbles with Bethany at some point, all the fun stuff on the internet, how do they do that?
The easiest way to figure out what I'm doing is on Instagram. It's Bethany_LaFlamme, at Bethany_LaFlamme. But the Bubbles with Bethany is super easy to register. It's BethanyLaFlamme.com/bubbles.
All right. That's pretty easy. Well, again, thanks so much for coming on. This is a really, really helpful, informative episode.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.